Hi, I'm Margie, and welcome to the Desert Island Dishes podcast. For any first-time listeners, this is the podcast where every week I ask my guests to choose their seven Desert Island dishes. Now, these range from finding out about the first dish they learned to cook, we discover the best dish they've ever eaten, the very important question of discovering their favorite sandwich, and of course, we find out about the last dish they would choose to eat before being cast off to the desert island. The answers are not only often delicious, but the stories around the dishes are much more revealing and intriguing than you might think. Don't forget to rate and review the podcast, as it genuinely really helps others to find out about the show, which is always good. And I'm not going to ask you to leave me 5 stars, but it kind of goes without saying, doesn't it? Insert winky face here. So here in the UK, it's been a short week, a short but sweet week, shall we say? Although actually the bank holiday feels like a very long time ago, or is that just me? I get really lovely messages from listeners of Desert Island Dishes, and I can't tell you how much I love reading them. I just love it. So thank you. And there's an email address on the website, www.desertislanddishes.co. And I've had a request for a new question, which I will hopefully ask most of the guests. But anyway, you'll hear it at the end of today's show. This week's guest is charming and has lots to say on the notion of plant-based eating, veganism, and everything in between, which I found very interesting. So enough of me. Sit back, grab a cuppa, and here we go. My guest today is Naomi Smart. Naomi is a lifestyle blogger and YouTube sensation who aims to help her audience to look, live, and feel better. Naomi has garnered a very impressive audience of more than 1.7 million followers on her YouTube channel and 1.8 million followers on her Instagram. She inspired millions of YouTube videos with her popular video series, What I Eat in a Day, which in turn inspired Naomi to write her own recipe book, Eat Smart, which was released in September 2016 and which is packed full of plant-based, delicious-looking recipes. Welcome, Naomi.
Hi, thank you so much.
So lovely to meet you. And am I right in thinking that you're pretty fresh off the back of what looked like a whistle-stop trip to Japan?
Yes, yeah, I was there for literally 2 nights. So not long at all.
That is a long way to go.
It is an 11 and a half hour flight there and back.
Were you there for work?
Yeah, I was there for work. So it was a very short visit, unfortunately. But I managed to see some of the sites and everything. Yeah. So it's really cool to be there.
Had you been there before?
No, first time, which was really frustrating, actually, because it's one of those places I've wanted to go for so long. And yeah. I could only be there for like
kind of looking
days.
A bit out the window.
Yeah.
Obviously, the food is amazing in Japan.
Like, yeah.
Did you get to sample some
it
good
stuff?
It was
absolutely amazing. Yeah, really, really great things.
Like, how is it being a vegan in Japan?
Surprisingly, it was okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went to this amazing teppanyaki restaurant that was really, really authentic. So beforehand, I was a bit worried that there wouldn't be any kind of plant-based food at all, but they had all of these amazing fresh vegetables that just were made. The things that they did, these vegetables, I don't know what they were doing, but it tasted really, really good.
So you're going to have to go back for longer than 48
hours.
No,
definitely.
So there's lots I want to ask you, but let's start by talking about the first desert island dish of the day. And that's the dish that most reminds you of your childhood?
So I would say that one dish that really reminds me of my childhood is spaghetti bolognese. It was one of those like classic dishes that my mum would make after school.
Yeah.
And would just kind of instantly be so warming. And it's one of those typical comfort foods that I just would get so excited about eating. And if that was on the menu at home, I would just get so, so excited and absolutely loved it.
Yeah, that's a good option. Was your mum's like one of the best?
Yeah, it was really, really good. Yeah. I mean, it's obviously such a simple dish to make, but there's just something about when your mum makes it, it's like the best one that you've ever had.
Yeah, so the best. So did your mum do most of the cooking when you were growing up?
Yeah, she did. Yeah.
And are you from a big family?
No, actually, growing up, it was I was an only child.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, I've now got a sister, but there's 23 years between us.
Oh, wow.
So I grew up as an only child.
Okay, so when you wanted spaghetti bolognese, you could kind of request it and maybe you would get it.
Yeah, exactly.
Am I right in thinking that you grew up in Brighton?
Yes, yeah.
That must have been a very cool place to grow up.
Oh, it was really, really amazing. I love Brighton and I love going back there now. Yeah.
And some amazing restaurants there now, aren't
there? Yeah, I mean, Brighton has been one of those incredible foodie cities that I'm so, so grateful that I managed to grow up there because I got to eat some really great food. And now there's an amazing kind of variety of different cuisines and really great for vegan food, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Really, really good veggie restaurants.
Yeah, I love that. It's unexpected places sometimes and you get pockets of just amazing sort of speciality food. It's so great, isn't it?
A couple of really good vegetarian restaurants that even meat eaters would say is probably their favorite restaurant.
Really?
Yeah, it's really,
that's
really
so
cool.
Great. I want to talk a little bit more about your diet and being plant-based in a bit, but I wondered, what did your family think when you decided that you were going to overhaul your diet? Because I just, in my family, it'd be quite hard for one of us to make a change like that without everyone else. But is that the case in yours?
Yeah, no, it's exactly the same. So I was the first one to kind of go vegan, let alone veggie.
Yeah.
My mum and grandma and everyone were just a bit like, what, really? Why? Because I did it overnight. So it wasn't like I'd been vegetarian for years and then went vegan. It was just literally went from eating everything to suddenly eating plant-based.
Yeah.
And at first, I think they just thought it was quite funny and that it wouldn't really last because they're all, you know, quite big meat eaters. Most meals will have meat as kind of the showstopper, I suppose, on the plate. But I think a few months went by and they're like, okay, this is actually a thing now. And yeah, it's been a few years now.
Yeah.
And I absolutely love it.
Have you lured them over to your way of eating?
They are they're definitely like more open to eating it. And I think before they would think, okay, plant-based food is just salads and a bit bland. But now that they can see what I cook and what I eat, they're always like very happy for me to come home and cook them a big meal. And, you know, they love it. So none of them are actually fully plant-based, but they're very, very open to eating the food I make. Yeah.
And I think it is just showing that not every meal has to be centered around meat. Like even if you don't go completely veggie or plant-based, the second desert island dish is the first dish that you learned to cook.
Oh, I don't even know if this counts as a dish, but it's probably pancakes.
Oh, no, that definitely counts. Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't require a lot of work, does it? But
no, there's definite skill involved in making a pancake.
Yeah,
Are we talking sort of traditional crepe type?
Yeah. So I think those kind of traditional British pancakes, because I know the American pancakes are kind of smaller and a bit more fluffy.
Yeah.
But the ones that I first learned to make were the really thin, quite large ones, and you'd roll them up with like sugar and lemon and everything.
Is there anything better?
I know. Yeah, just so classic. So that was probably the first dish that I ever first like learned to make.
I mean, yeah, there's lots of like the flipping, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's some skill involved.
So you studied law at university before setting up your YouTube channel in 2014.
Yeah.
What made you decide not to go into the law?
Well, I really loved studying it. But the strange thing was that whenever I did any kind of internships or work experience in law firms, I just had this deep feeling that it just wasn't for me. I
really
just knew, and I kept trying to tell myself, oh, you know, don't be silly, work's always going to be hard or whatever, and you know, no one loves their job when they first go into it.
Yeah.
But it was just something that felt like I was so disconnected to the work, and I just felt like it wasn't what I was meant to do. And that was so strong that I eventually decided that I wasn't going to continue with it, which was such a hard decision because I'd just done 3 years of law and I'd graduated and everything. But I was so pleased that I graduated and I was so pleased that I actually loved studying it.
Yeah.
And I had no regrets throughout those years of studying it because it was such a great experience. But that's when I just fell into blogging and YouTube. So I think the month after I graduated, I started my blog. And it was basically just a way for me to talk about things and start writing again since graduating. Things that are obviously very different to law, but still just being a bit creative. And I loved writing. And so that suddenly turned into a YouTube channel somehow a few months later.
Isn't that so cool? Like, that's a real lesson, and you've got to listen to your gut.
Yeah.
Because it is a big decision to have done all of that studying, and you kind of feel lots of external pressure, don't
yeah.
you?
Yeah, it's not easy making those kind of decisions.
No.
Definitely. I think the easy option would have been actually staying, but I would have just absolutely yeah. hated it.
Isn't it so weird that that would have been the easy option?
Like, I know.
And I don't imagine that you do, but do you ever have moments of sort of wondering, could you have been like Ally McBeal? Or...
I mean, the idea would have been great, but I think the reality would have been very, very different.
Yeah.
I would have been causing havoc. God knows what kind of mistakes I'd be making.
Oh my God, that's such a terrifying thought. Obviously, you've had enormous success, and it feels like it really is just the beginning. You seem to have really supportive followers, but I wondered, have you ever had any bad experiences with trolls?
Yeah, I think the minute you are online, it's sad to say, but you almost have to expect to get some kind of negativity, whether it's trolling or just people giving you kind of, I don't know.
Unwarranted advice.
Yeah, definitely.
What's your general approach to sort of dealing with that? Do you respond to it or ignore it? What's sort of your tactic?
It totally depends on what it is. If it's something that I can actually take on board and change my content in a way that will kind of make my followers a bit happier or something, like kind of advice that they've given me.
Yeah.
Absolutely fine. Like, I will take that on board. But
yeah, constructive
criticism. I'm always very, very like, I'll open my eyes
yeah.
to that. I love that. But if it's just something that I can't change about myself and that's actually just quite nasty and cruel, I do my best to not listen, because obviously there's nothing you can do about those things. But I think it's only human to kind of think about it and dwell on it. And, maybe it'll upset you or make you angry and you're going to have some kind of reaction.
Yeah.
But one thing that I always tell myself now over the years is to actually, if I get one negative comment, read the positive ones as well, because it's so easy to get, say, 10 positive comments and then one negative one, and it's that one negative one that's going to affect you.
Why is that?
I know.
It's human nature, but it's so weird that we do that, isn't
yeah.
it?
So I always try and just read the positive ones as well.
Yeah, that sounds very wise. I'm really interested in it. Like, Women's Hour Radio 4 did a segment on trolls last week, and it was really interesting and really shocking, but I think really good that it's sort of a conversation that we're all talking about a bit more.
Yeah, totally.
I read somewhere that you have a mantra. I don't know if this is still true, but it's to always wait 24 hours before you respond to something. And that sounds very measured and very sensible, maybe easier said than done. But was that mantra born out of like a particular experience?
It was just something that my grandma taught me, actually. I think maybe when I was at school, I was frustrated about a friend, or I don't know, maybe I'd had a little fallout or something with a teacher. I can't remember exactly what it was. It was very minor, but it was something that had upset me. And my grandma taught me there and then. She said, right, let's sit on it for 24 hours, because you never want to act in haste. You never want to regret things that you say. And everyone will say things in the moment that they probably will end up regretting,
yeah,
and cause more of a scene or just kind of blow it way out of proportion. So as kind of upset as I was in the moment, I was like, okay, I'm going to wait until the morning. So I left that 24 hours and I felt totally differently the next day. I was like, thank God I didn't say anything or do anything or act on it or whatever. And I still live by that today. So if something upsets me or angers me or whatever, I always sit on it.
Yeah, it's so true. Like, you get an email or something that upsets you and like your instant reaction is just to reply like a really angry, and then yeah, you should never. Sometimes it's quite good to write that and then not send it.
Yeah.
So it's sort of out of you, but you haven't pressed send.
Yeah,
don't
definitely.
Press send.
You kind of get it out of your system because you feel like you've got all the anger
yeah.
out, and then just put it in your drafts for a while or don't send anything.
Yeah. But you don't strike me as someone who gets particularly cross or angry very often.
No, I don't, to be honest. I'm probably sounding like, yeah, when I get really angry and frustrated, I actually...
Once every 10 years.
Yeah. No, I think it takes a lot for me to get actually angry.
Yeah.
But I think we all get frustrated about little things. But that's when things can just get totally blown out of the water.
Yeah, that's so true. The third desert island dish. What's the best dish you've ever eaten?
Oh, this is such a hard question. I mean, there's a whole variety of things. I think recently I've had some really amazing food in restaurants in London and Brighton.
Actually. Oh, yeah.
Those restaurants I was talking about. I mean, there's so many amazing options. Like,
Is Silo one of the ones in...
Silo's in Brighton. That's really good. Silo has very kind of simple food and it's all cooked right there in the kitchen, but it's so delicious. And I think it's all down to the ingredients.
They're no waste, aren't they? So they use like absolutely everything. So it's like really creative.
Yeah, totally zero waste restaurants. I think it's the first in the UK. Maybe even Europe.
I think it is. Yeah.
There's zero waste restaurants. So they... Everything has been recycled, even the tables, the chairs, the plates, the glasses, everything is recycled. And then the food, none of that goes to waste. They make compost out of it right there on the premises, and they grow fruit and veg out the back, and they create their own beers. And oh, it's amazing. That's such a great restaurant. And it kind of sums up Brighton.
Yeah.
But then the vegetarian restaurants that I was talking about, there's one called Food for Friends that I absolutely love. And then the other one is called Terre à Terre. Both of them are quite old school restaurants now, but the food is just unbelievable.
Really?
Really.
Is there
good.
Anything in particular that you'd like recommend people have?
Well, there's this sharing plate at Food for Friends of like onion bhajis and things like that, kind of like hummus and flatbreads and tabbouleh, all kinds of dishes, but each one is just so amazing. Like you eat it and you're like, what's in that? How have they done that? It's amazing.
But like the kind of sharing food that you wish you weren't sharing.
Exactly. Yeah. They do tapas as well, but I tend to just, you know, have that just for myself. Yeah. Like six dishes. Yeah. And Terre à Terre just is so creative with their food. One of the best dishes I've had there was a fish and chips, but it was totally vegan. And I'm not normally one to like tofu that much. I don't eat it that much. But they'd made the battered fish out of tofu. Yum. And then they had the best mushy peas on the side and the best chips. It was, yeah, really, really good.
I mean, yeah, like you say, you don't really like tofu, but I guess anything when it's been battered
when
and fried.
Yeah.
Well, I've been very generous there and let you have a few different options.
I could have gone on as well.
Let's talk a little bit about your diet, because I was interested when I asked you that question, whether it was going to hark back to your pre-plant-based days, sort of. Like when I interviewed Dolly Alderton, she's now a vegetarian and she just couldn't stop talking about roast chicken.
Oh, no, really?
But let's talk about vegan versus plant-based, because you describe your diet as plant-based.
Plant-based, yeah.
And what, for someone who doesn't know, what is the difference?
So vegan is kind of 100% no animal products whatsoever in your diet or your lifestyle.
Okay. So I, not just in the food you
not
eat?
Not just food. So vegan is more of a lifestyle. So it would be totally cruelty-free beauty products, clothing, everything like that. No honey, nothing that derives from any kind of animal products whatsoever.
Okay.
Whereas I suppose I've taken more of the more laid back approach, I suppose. Not to say that there's anything wrong with vegan or plant-based, like both, you know, it's totally a decision for the individual person to make. But I tend to say myself as plant-based rather than vegan, because I don't want to upset people that do follow a 100% vegan lifestyle and I don't.
Yeah.
Mine is mainly about the way that I eat. So I have a plant-based diet. So I don't have any kind of animal products. I do have honey, but that's just a preference for myself. I also had figs the other day and someone told me that they're not vegan, which
a fig isn't vegan.
Apparently not.
Why?
Because the wasps fly into the fig and then the fig like eats the wasp or something like that. And the wasp lays its egg but dies in the fig. So apparently
you're really putting me off figs. I didn't know that. What, like a Venus flytrap?
Kind of, yeah. And then the wasp essentially like grows into the fruit.
What?
Unless the fruit ripens.
Who told you this?
It was on a comment on YouTube. I know. It fascinated me. I was like, wow.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I never knew that either. And so what made you decide to change the way you eat? Like, was it something that you'd read? Was it something you'd been thinking about for a really long time? Or how did it come about?
So it was when I finished university and I'd been eating quite unhealthily, like most students, for the last few years. And I kind of came out feeling like, right, something needs to change. I can't be having those Domino's pizzas anymore and huge tubs of Ben and Jerry's.
They are good sometimes though, aren't they?
I mean, obviously everything in moderation, but I just came out feeling like, okay, something needs to change. And one thing that's actually quite interesting is it was purely about how I felt.
Okay.
I just didn't feel like myself, felt like really sluggish and just, I think I just felt unhealthy. As simple as that. And I just thought, right, I'm going to get into cooking and start cooking my meals from scratch. And that's kind of when I first started really loving cooking, because I was really conscious of like, right, what's going in this meal? You know, rather than just picking up the phone and making an order for food to arrive at your house.
Yeah, it's a real learning process, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and I think it is all about becoming more in tune with your body. And the more and more that I was researching into the benefits of using more, eating more fruit and vegetables and just more wholesome, nutritious food, that's when I started reading more and more about the plant-based diet and how good it can be and how it can prevent certain diseases and things like that. And I was just absolutely fascinated and started researching into it more and more by buying books. And I thought, you know what, I can't knock it or judge it until I try it. Tomorrow, I'm just going to be plant-based and see how it goes. And
literally overnight.
But I hadn't set myself a target to be like plant-based for a month or a year or a week or whatever. It was like, tomorrow, let's just see how it goes. And I mean, it's been about 4.5 years now and I've just never looked back, but that was not the plan.
Yeah. But I guess in a way, maybe that approach made it easier because you weren't, it wasn't sort of like sticking to something for a set time. You were just going with the flow.
Yeah, I wasn't putting any pressure on myself. Yeah. And I didn't see it as like a diet in a way. It was purely just, let's see how if I can eat this way tomorrow.
And yeah. And how did you feel?
Amazing. Like
instantly.
I'd say after about a week, I felt almost like a different person. I know that sounds really, really extreme, but I really did feel like I was back to my usual self, but just better, like healthy and just everything.
Like, did you have more energy or?
More energy, hair, skin and nails noticeably better.
Really?
Yeah.
And so interesting.
More just like my well-being. Like I just felt good more than anything. And that's what it's always been about for me.
Yeah.
How do you feel?
Yeah, that's the most important thing. A bit of a cliche question, but is there anything that you miss? Like, I know cheese and bacon and come up a lot. Like eggs is that's quite a difficult one to give up. But
weirdly, yeah, I don't get food cravings for any specific foods, which I was really surprised at myself. I was like, oh, I'm really going to miss bacon sandwiches, with like loads of ketchup in the morning or, you know, things like that. But actually, no, I've never craved anything. The only thing is, I suppose out of ease, if I'm out and about with friends and you go into a bakery or whatever and there's loads of croissants there, things like that.
Oh my God, I hadn't even thought about croissants.
I mean, because you can get vegan ones, but obviously not readily available.
Yeah.
So it's more like out of ease.
One.
Yeah, when I'm like, oh, this is a little bit frustrating right now. But then if you go and find yourself a plant-based alternative or make your own.
That's really interesting because, yeah, like the blanket, just eating a vegan diet is sort of doable when you think about it. But like you say, you wouldn't I obviously do know that croissants have butter and eggs in, but it's not sort of immediately obvious.
You wouldn't think about it. Yeah, no.
There's all those little decisions that you're like constantly making.
Yeah.
And it's very impressive that you did it overnight. I think that's amazing. We're moving on to the fourth desert island dish. And that's, what is your favorite sandwich?
Oh, okay. Have you ever had coconut bacon before?
No, I haven't.
So it's like coconut flakes, but it's flavored in a way that tastes like bacon. It's like smoked coconut,
okay.
I suppose, but it kind of has that similar smoky taste, salty taste to your bacon.
That's very clever.
Yeah, it's really, really clever. And there's actually a place in London that do really great sandwiches. It's like a BLT.
Okay.
But instead of the bacon, it's the coconut bacon. And then you've got cashew mayonnaise in there and like avocado and tomato. It's just really, really delicious.
So creative. So where is the place in
That's
London?
At Farm Girl.
Okay. Oh yeah. And that's interesting. Yeah. We were saying before about how people do get very particular about which is the best sandwich.
Yeah.
But that does sound like a very good choice. What would be, if you were making a sandwich at home, would you eat sandwiches?
Do you know what? I don't tend to make actual sandwiches at home. I have a lot of rye bread with peanut butter, and I got really into last summer peanut butter and then strawberry jam, you know, that typical peanut butter jelly type
option.
Thing. But for some reason, I don't know why, but when I'm at home, I would have two slices with the topping rather than a sandwich.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It's like the same thing. I just wouldn't put it into a sandwich.
It's so weird how we get into like little routines and rhythms. It's so
weird, I suppose it's more like toast rather than a sandwich. But
yeah.
yeah, I guess at home.
Have you ever been asked about that before, Naomi?
No, I can't say I've ever actually spoken about that before. Even my own eyes are being opened up to my weird habits at home, yeah. Sandwiches and toast.
You heard it here first on Desert Island Dishes. So this seems a good segue into talking about your What I Eat in a Day videos. Mm. Am I right in saying that you did come up with that idea?
I don't know if I like full-on created What I Eat in a Day videos.
I feel like you did.
I don't remember seeing videos like it before, and it literally came by as a mistake because I would vlog my days. So it's almost like just a video diary from day to night. But because I just loved cooking, most of it would be about food.
Yeah.
Some people were like, why don't you just make these videos about food? Like, it's all you really talk about anyways. So it's like, okay, let's just call this video What I Eat in a Day. So that's when I started that series of just what I eat in a day, breakfast, lunch, dinner, what I'm making, what I'm cooking. And it would almost be like every little meal would be a mini cooking tutorial in a way, because I would show exactly how I make it and, you know, what snacks I would like to have throughout the day. So yeah, it kind of went from there.
Were you surprised at how interested people were in what you were eating?
Yeah, because even in those vlogs in the early days before they were called What I Eat in a Day, I thought, oh, people are going to be so sick and tired of this vlog again. Like, all it is food. Yeah. But actually, people just wanted that to be the whole video. Like, let's just scrap the other stuff of you, you know, going to the cinema, and let's just
focus. We don't want to see any of that. What are you eating?
Yeah.
Why is it that people are so interested in what you're eating and what you're cooking?
I think maybe it's partly because I'm just so passionate about it and I love food. And I like to think that I can get quite creative in the kitchen. Like, I really, really love cooking and making a classic dish into a plant-based alternative. Things like shepherd's pies, for example, and even spaghetti bolognese. Like, I can still make it, but I just make it in a different way to what people are used to.
Yeah. So how do you make your spaghetti bolognese now?
I love kind of playing with the textures to get that kind of, I suppose, meat consistency. So whether that's walnuts crushed up and lentils and really finely diced mushrooms, things like that.
Do you eat things like corn?
No, I prefer to actually make my own out of like fresh ingredients. That's just a personal preference. I suppose it's a lot easier to just go and buy some corn rather than crushing walnuts or dicing mushrooms. But I love the process of like cooking it all.
Do you think your new spaghetti bolognese can give your mum's a run for its money?
I've never actually cooked it for her.
Oh my God, you need to do like a little ready, steady cook contest.
Yeah.
That would be a great video.
Yeah. But I mean, I personally really, really love it. Whether she would love mine as much as hers, I don't know.
I bet she would. How do you tend to start the day? I'm always particularly interested with people who don't have like a traditional office job. Like, do you have a morning routine?
I like starting my day with some warm water. And this is something that I've recently discovered. Apparently, hot and warm water hydrates you a lot better than cold water.
Oh, really?
And so I would used to always just start my day with like cold water, even like ice water. But then I learned this little fact that warm water hydrates you more.
There we go.
So now I start my day with some warm or hot water, or even a herbal tea or some lemon in there, or fresh ginger, something like that, just to infuse the water, make it a bit more exciting.
Yeah.
And then I tend to go to the gym or a run. I love running this time of year, you know, even just having the sun out, even if it's cold, I don't mind. It's just the sun, like the brightness, I love.
Yeah, and just getting fresh air feels so good.
Yeah, I love it. So I run around along the river, which is so, so beautiful, like crossing the bridge when it's, you know, only 7, 8 a.m. I absolutely love that.
So do you tend to do that most mornings?
Most mornings I'll get my body moving in some way, whether it's a run or going to the gym or going to a class or just getting out and walking. I just love starting my day with being active.
Would you feel weird if you didn't do any exercise for a bit?
I mean, we've just had the long weekend and I hardly did any exercise, to be honest, but that's absolutely fine as well.
Yeah.
I do like getting my body moving, but I can equally just totally switch off and relax when I'm around family at home in Brighton. But when I'm in London, my routine is to always, you know, get active in some way.
Didn't you do a marathon?
Yeah, I ran the London Marathon.
Oh my goodness. How was that?
I mean, it was tough. It's probably the craziest thing that I've ever done in my life, but it was amazing.
I can't even like That is just so impressive. It's amazing.
Do you know what? Like, the day itself was brilliant and I weirdly loved it. It's just the training process that is so time consuming. Like, your weekends have to all be about training and going on this long run.
How long are you training beforehand?
I mean, I think I started around like November, December, kind of pushing my runs because I was always running, but very short runs.
Yeah.
So I think around November, December, I started pushing myself to do longer and longer runs. And then it got to like, I think my longest run was probably 22 miles March, April time. And then the marathon was in April.
I mean, it's just, I went to watch my friend who did it a couple of years ago and I just like cried the whole time.
It's emotional.
It's really emotional. Like, it's just so impressive. The fifth desert island dish is, what is the dish you eat the most often?
Oh, wow. Okay. Do you know what? I think it's porridge, and that sounds so boring. so boring. But it's probably the meal that I eat most frequently.
Yeah.
Even in the summer, I love it. It's really, really strange. But
always to start your day, or are you partial to some porridge for supper?
Always. I'm all for, you know, breakfast for dinner. Yeah. But I tend to, have it in the morning first thing. After I go for a run or the gym, I'll get back and make some porridge. But I like mixing it up and adding different flavors. Like in my book, for example, I've got a banana bread porridge, carrot cake porridge, cherry Bakewell porridge. Like, I just like making it a bit different.
So
literally, carrot cake is some grated carrot in there, raisins, loads of cinnamon and nutmeg and things like that, a bit of maple syrup.
So that's putting like old school porridge where it was just like water and salt to shame, isn't it?
Yeah.
Your book, Eat Smart, I mean, how perfectly does your name lend itself to the title of the book? So good. But it came out a few years ago and it really is great. And I really did feel like it sort of debunks the myth that vegans are just nibbling on a wilted salad leaf.
Yeah.
What was the process of writing the book like? Did you enjoy it?
Oh, it was a real, real mix of emotions, not going to lie. I mean, I already had so many recipes ready to go. Which is why I approached publish it. So I basically had about 90 recipes.
Okay.
And then I spent a day with publishers just like, here's 90 recipes.
Amazing.
And then I made it up to, I think it was just over 150 recipes in the end. And it was those last few recipes where, I mean, I was in my kitchen for months and I think I went a bit crazy, just like crazy cooking lady in my flat in Notting Hill. And I was so lucky to have amazing friends that would come around and literally do the washing up and eat the food that I was making.
I mean, I thought, I was going to say just about the eating. I was like, I'm sure they were fine with that.
They were happy, to come around and do the washing up if they got rewarded with food.
That seems a fair trade-off, definitely. Obviously, there are so many amazing recipes in there, but is there one that people are sort of always telling you that they're making? Like, is there sort of a standout recipe?
Yeah, and it really surprised me what one it was. It was my mac and cheese.
Oh, really?
And I didn't even photograph it for the book. So it's one of the recipes in there that doesn't have a photo
That's
to go so with it.
Interesting.
And I was not expecting it. Yeah. It was one of my personal favorites, but I mean, because it's mac and cheese and it is like a pasta with an orangey kind of sauce, there wasn't much you could do creatively for the photo shoot.
Yeah.
So we
were
like,
pumped for some beautiful porridge.
And it was always one of my favorites. And I think maybe I made it in one of my videos and showed how like easy it could be to make it. And then even now, so the book was launched in September 2016. And even to this day, I'm being sent photos on Instagram, tagged in photos and on Twitter of this mac and cheese.
What's the sauce made out of? Is it cashew?
No, it's actually butternut squash. Yeah. And then I obviously add a few things in there, like a little bit of mustard for a bit of a kick and a little bit of chili as well, and just season it really well. And it's brown rice pasta. It's one of my favorites. Like, I make it all the time.
What are your thoughts on nutritional yeast?
I do have it. Yeah. I think a lot of vegans or just people on even vegetarian diets can lack in vitamin B12.
Okay.
And nutritional yeast is a really great way to get that into your system.
Yeah. It's a very clever flavor, isn't it?
Very clever.
Yeah, it really is.
It tastes like cheese.
Yeah,
it's got
it's
the worst
cheesy
name in the world.
Yeah.
I wish it wasn't called nutritional
they
yeast.
They need to rebrand it, don't they? Who came up with that?
So gross. When I first told my boyfriend about, I was like, oh, do you want any nutritional yeast? And he was like, what is that in your cupboard?
It does sound like something you should get from the chemist, doesn't it?
But no, I think it's great to like make those cheesy sauces. Yeah, I think that taste is really great. And like I say, the B12.
Yeah. This is a very random question, but Are there any vegan foods or plant-based recipes that the internet has sort of raved about and you just, you know, haven't been able to, you know, you've been really excited about trying and then you've tried it and you're like, oh, this is actually really gross?
Oh, just so like actual vegan food trends.
Yeah, just something that everyone's talking about. And then by the time you get around to having it, you're like, oh, is it just me?
I mean, I'm not a fan of any kind of meat alternative. Like you go to supermarkets and they have the vegan bacon or the vegan sausages, like okay. things like that, like actual yeah. fake meats. I don't like, just because they're just processed foods. And it's not.
Also, it's a bit weird, like if you're not going to eat meat, then just don't eat meat. Like don't yeah. eat something that's pretending to be meat.
I mean, I suppose if people turn vegetarian for, you know, animal welfare and, but they, sounds awful, but they like the taste of meat, but don't want to harm an animal for that, yeah. you know, it makes sense. I can see why people would want it. But me personally, it's just not good for you. It's like processed food. You can obviously get the more natural ones or even like try and make it at home. That would be fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me, I'm not a huge fan of those. I did see something about a year ago that seemed to be a big trend. And it was like chicken drumsticks, but it was made out of cauliflower. And I never made it because I thought it's cauliflower. How can it taste like yeah. a chicken drumstick? But it looked pretty impressive.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe that's one we should put on the list. The sixth desert island dish is, what is your go-to dinner party dish?
Ooh.
Do you get to throw many dinner parties?
I don't actually. I wish I did. I have friends around, but it's always very kind of laid back and casual. Yeah. And I'll
that
cook
counts.
Something quite
That counts
casual.
As a dinner party.
Okay. One thing that's really good is my shepherd's pie. That's really good for when you've got guests around, because you can just make one huge shepherd's pie and then it's really easy to serve to everyone.
Yeah. So what goes into your shepherd's pie?
So I've got lentils in there. It's kind of like the basic green lentils, but then loads and loads of vegetables diced up in there and an amazing rich sauce, because you leave it to like cook for a while. So those flavors really infuse. And then the top is potato and parsnip. But I also like to do a sweet potato top sometimes as well.
Yeah, that sounds really good.
And just loads of fresh herbs. I think fresh herbs are the secret ingredient in there rather than dried.
I was thinking when I was writing the questions that for you, throwing a dinner party must be quite fun, because it's a chance to show people that you're not just eating salad, like that your food is really delicious. And it's sort of, I guess, quite a fun challenge, isn't
it? Yeah, definitely. And I've recently moved house and I've been so excited about organizing the dinner parties. But rather than even thinking about who's coming, I just get so carried away with the food that I'm going to cook. I was, oh, I could do that. I could do this. And then we could do that. And I'm like, wait, I haven't even got anything planned.
I haven't even asked anyone to come yet, but I know what we're eating. Lots of your recipes are inspired by your travels. Where is the best place you visited in terms of the food?
I would say Mauritius was a really interesting place for food. Yeah, I was, I had this cooking kind of class, I suppose, that was set up by the hotel, but it was just one-on-one with the chef that worked there, who was from Mauritius. He lived there his whole life, grew up there. And the food was unbelievable. And the fusion of food out there is really interesting.
So what is the food?
Well, they've got a big African influence, a big Indian influence and Asian in general, but then also French.
Oh yeah, of course.
So there's this real amazing concoction or like cuisines. The food is just unbelievable. And I learned so much out there. And the food, it was kind of cooked in a French way, but the flavors were very Asian inspired. And it was just beautiful.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, really, really good. I came home with like scribbled pieces of paper in my suitcase.
Yeah, that's
random things.
So cool to have a lesson.
Yeah, it was really, really nice. Actually, I'd recommend that if you ever go to an amazing hotel or not, you know, just somewhere quite exotic that you would never normally go to, ask if the chef has a free moment one afternoon, kind of between meals when he maybe won't be too busy, and just see if they can show you a couple of their signature dishes, because that's what was set up for me. Just like, I think it was two or three of their signature dishes, went into the kitchen, this is how you make it, and I was just there with like a notepad watching and then eating at the same time.
Oh my goodness, yeah, that sounds like the dream. We're on to the final desert island dish of the day, and that's the last dish you would choose to eat before being cast off to the desert island.
Wow. Okay. I feel like this is going to be the hardest one.
You can have many courses.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. This is interesting. Yeah. I'm going to start with the dessert.
Okay, yes, perfect. Do it.
This is the one that is one of my absolute favorites. It's a beetroot chocolate cake. So it's like, oh, this layered chocolate cake with the most amazing ganache in there. And it's made with like grated beetroot in there as well, which just adds this real richness to that. It doesn't like taste of beetroot. No. It's not like a vegetable cake. Like it's so decadent and indulgent. And I just absolutely love that.
Okay. You can have a whole cake.
Yeah. Can I have a scoop of ice cream on the side
of
as well?
Of course. Yes.
And then I think.
Are you going to have that like as a starter?
Yeah, I suppose. Why not? If I'm on a desert island, well, I mean, there's no one there to tell me what I can and can't do. So I'll just be like, right, I'm going to start with some chocolate cake.
I love it.
No one's watching. No one's here. Probably just fill up on cake.
You can leave it there if you want.
And then I think for the main, it would have to be a curry. I'm obsessed with curries that are cooked from scratch in a really beautiful, authentic way.
Yeah.
And I think this is after we've been speaking about Mauritius, because one of these dishes comes to mind that I make all the time today, like since visiting Mauritius a couple of years ago. And it's this curry that just has the most beautiful red curry sauce. And it's all made from scratch. You know, there's no curry paste there. You basically are crushing garlic and fresh ginger and all these amazing spices and herbs, and just the result is unbelievable. So I think that would have to be my desert island dish.
Yeah, that sounds really good. And you're allowed to take with you one luxury item. It can be anything you like.
Could it be, would an animal count as a...
Yes, we've had lots of animals.
As a luxury item.
Yeah, had lots of dogs, lots of cats.
I would have a puppy.
Yeah?
Oh. Yeah, I don't even have a puppy myself.
But you just get one.
I would need company.
You can take mine.
Oh, yeah, your
puppy. He's very naughty. But yeah, that's a great answer. Yeah, that can be your luxury. One, we've had a listener request for a final question. And if you could only have one cookbook with you for the rest of your life, which would it be?
Oh, that's a really interesting one. I'm going to say, I feel like I can't say my own.
No, I mean, you could.
Well,
available in all good bookshops.
Yeah, exactly. That's smart. No, I know all of my recipes off by heart. So they're all
true.
In my head.
Yeah, that would be
amazing. So if I could take one cookbook with me, it would probably be Happy Pears cookbook. They're amazing. These twins from Ireland, and their cookbook is so, so amazing. I love it. So I bring that with me with all of my own recipes up in my head too.
Thank you so much for letting us hear your desert island dishes.
Thank you for having me.
That was the lovely Naomi. I've been feeling rather bad about offering my dog to go to the island, but luckily I don't think Digby, my dachshund, actually listens to the podcast. Kind of rude, but hey-ho. I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and I'm making some exciting changes to the website, which won't be up quite yet, but I'm excited for them nonetheless. Come and say hi on Instagram. You'll find me at Made by Margie, also on Twitter. And most importantly, thank you so much for listening. See you next time.